Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is 90.9 WBUR. I'm Deborah Becker in the studio this morning with Bob Oakes. We're covering the Boston Marathon bombings and last night's dramatic capture of a suspect. 19-year-old Joar Sanayev is hospitalized in serious condition at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center today. He was found hidden under a tarp over a boat in a backyard in Watertown last night. The discovery capped a long, dramatic day where much of Boston stood still. After a carjacking and police shootout in Watertown in which Sanayev's older brother Tamerlane was killed, authorities asked residents to stay in their homes until they could find the younger Sanayev. They expanded their so-called shelter-in-place order to other Boston area communities. They suspended public transportation. And then at about 6 o'clock last night, they lifted that order. However, an hour later, a Watertown resident called police to say that a man was hiding in his boat. Authorities carefully approached the boat using stun grenades and firing shots before Sanayev was taken into custody. Now it's expected that he'll be questioned by a special interrogation team. Joining us to talk about this is Glenn Carl. He's a retired CIA interrogator. Welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
What approach do you think authorities are going to have to use? Is there one? Are there several? Do they sort of see what kind of mindset a suspect is in before they decide? Or how do you go about beginning to question a suspect like this?
Well, I think the fact that he's going to be interrogated by the high-value target unit is a sign of the progress that the United States National Security Establishment has made in the decades since, or more now, since the attacks of 9/11. When I first started, things by the CIA, anyway, were done ad hoc. It was very early days for me, over 10 years ago. And we didn't have training or guidelines. The high-value target interrogation team has legal guidance and doctrinal approaches that we didn't. So that's good. I think the way to do this is the way that the FBI has done it for decades, and they're quite good at this, and that I worked out on the fly overseas myself a decade ago, and that is you establish a rapport. It's always a human relation between an interrogator and a detainee or an official and a citizen, and you have to start with that.
And what are some of the priorities that you try to establish, you know, first and foremost, when you're going about doing this high-value interrogation?
Well, gosh, the circumstances are so much different with this young fellow compared to the senior al-Qaeda person reputedly that I was involved in. But you always want to find out about. First thing you have to do, even if you think the answer is unlikely to bear fruit, is to ask about any other threats planned or known that the detainee may have. That's just a procedure you have to follow, because if you don't ask the question, and if ever the answer were that there were something, then you would have missed a way to save lives, blood and treasure.
So let me make sure I understand that you're saying foremost is finding out if these guys were a pair of lone wolves or whether they had help.
I guess that's a fair way to put it. Yes, yeah, you have to try to establish at first as the first priority if any other action is known or intended or imminent or in the works, and then from there, even if the answer is unsatisfactory, at least you have to get that on the table. And then what you do, I think, is you establish a relationship. The person will be, certainly this 19-year-old will be probably terrified. It is a daunting prospect, however defiant one or confident one may be, to be in the control of the National Security Establishment. The U.S. has vast powers, and arrogant as a person might be, an individual knows that he doesn't have the resources or the strength of the government, and so you start to establish a rapport, and actually put the person at ease. That's the way to do it. If you intimidate someone, they will become defensive, and you don't really want that.
But this guy did not give himself up right away yesterday. He hid in that boat maybe for hours, and then, according to authorities, fired shots at them, the law enforcement officers, as they approached, even though he was apparently injured in a pool of blood in the boat, as it's been described. So as an interrogator, what's that tell you about him, and how does that alter or influence the approach of the interrogators?
Well, I guess what it tells me is that for whatever series of events or shifts in thinking that the brothers went through in recent years, if they went through changes, he is quite hostile. But that doesn't really change, to my mind, the approach that you have to take. Even hostile responses are useful. And even the absence of a response can sometimes, depending on the way the questions are framed, help you start to understand what the person is willing to talk about or not, or more importantly even, what the person's psychological makeup and buttons are. So I think that the thing you do is you start to talk, and the absence of a response is itself a response, and you go from there.
You know, what's different, I guess, when you talk about this high-value target unit and high-value suspects here? I'm assuming that means high-profile cases. A lot of this, you know, as you said, is based on FBI guidelines for doing investigations like this, which have been around for decades. I'm wondering, what's the biggest difference in the approach of these to these so-called high-value suspects?
Oh, well, a high-value target will be someone who's considered to be important with significant information or a significant position in some terrorist operation or organization itself. After the invasion of Afghanistan and then Iraq, the United States National Security Establishment had large numbers of people in its control, prisoners. Most of them were young men with AK-47s who didn't have any particular knowledge. But some few of them were considered to be senior officers, we can say, in Al-Qaeda or in the Iraqi government or Taliban and so on. And they would have knowledge that was much more useful. And the way you approach them is through a far more labor-intensive interrogation, where you bring the files you have on them to bear, as well as psychologists and trained interrogators. All of the different agencies of the government will be involved. It's a much more intensive approach, with behind the interrogators' questions, usually a shockingly, actually, vast amount of information and perspective. So that's what happens with a high-value target or detainee.
All right, Glenn Carl, retired CIA interrogator. I imagine you have no idea, but this sounds like it could take quite some time.
Well, I think that it should, yeah. The imagination, the thought that an interrogator can go in and ask a few questions and the man will break or share information quickly, that is conceivable, but really it's a long, long process to establish the rapport and then to explore every little a branch of the tree of responses. So it's a long process. It should be.
All right. Glenn, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Anytime.